Throughout the dreary holiday news cycle of plane crash hunts, New York City police tensions, Russia's president seemed to be taking some preemptive steps to prevent any sort of political criticism. Last week, anti-corruption crusader and opposition activist Alexei Navalny, who has been under house arrest for nearly a year for a charge of fraud, got a suspended sentence. And at the same time, authorities sentenced his brother Oleg to 3.5 years in a prison colony. Navalny responded by organizing street protests. In an environment where the Russian middle class faces some pain from falling oil prices and Western sanctions, the question is posed, can the opposition to Putin's rule by decree and confrontation with the West get any traction? I'm joined now by Emily Parker, digital diplomacy advisor and senior fellow at the New America Foundation. She's also the author of Now I Know Who My Comrades Are, Voices from the Internet Underground. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where is the Russian opposition? Where does it live? Is it in a secret place? We certainly knew during the Soviet period there was all kinds of secret voices of opposition ready when the moment came.
Well, I think that the internet is playing an important role for the Russian opposition. And what's interesting is that until very recently, people thought that the Russian opposition was basically dead. In late 2011 and early 2012, the Russian opposition shocked the world by having tens of thousands of people organizing and protesting on the streets. Since then, the Kremlin has really cracked down on the opposition. So I think the fact that anybody showed up at all to opposition protests is actually quite remarkable in the current environment. But they have a very long battle ahead, for sure.
What about Navalny? Is he a character who people rally around? What about Garry Kasparov, who once aspired to challenge Putin?
Well, I think what's interesting about Navalny in particular is that he is using the internet as a form of political resistance. And I lived in Russia in 2010, and back then, the Kremlin didn't really take the internet seriously. It wasn't considered a political threat. And Navalny is essentially a blogger. That's what he is. And he used his blog to become one of the most prominent opposition figures in today's Russia. And I think that's what's really interesting about the story. And what we see now is that the Kremlin is really cracking down on the internet, and they're cracking down on it hard with various censorship and regulations and laws. So, you know, I think not only is Navalny an interesting opposition figure, he's an interesting symbol of how the internet can be used against authoritarian governments.
But let me challenge you on that.
Sure.
I mean, is it possible that the internet, because it's so kind of behind the scenes, mm-hmm. plays into Putin's hands, that he can characterize the internet as a counter-revolutionary mm-hmm. force mm-hmm. of outsiders trying to affect what's
CIA
going on?
A CIA project, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Which is exactly what he's done. Well, yes. And of course, I have to add the disclaimer here that the internet is not a magic bullet and that, of course, Russian authorities use the internet against the opposition. And, you know, of course, they can characterize the internet that way. But what I think is quite interesting about the Russia story is that until fairly recently, the Kremlin saw the internet as sheerly virtual, kind of as you said, this thing that's behind the scenes in people's homes. People go online to complain and to gossip, but it won't actually do anything in real life. And the protests of late 2011, early 2012 really changed that perception, because those protests, some were the largest since the fall of the Soviet Union, were largely organized online. And I think that showed the Kremlin that this is something we need to take a little bit more seriously.
What's the fate of Navalny and his brother Oleg, do you think?
Well, now there's in the most recent news, we see Navalny talking about defying his house arrest, which is considerably raising the stakes. And I think Navalny does not want this story to fade away, and he does not want the opposition to sink back into apathy. So I don't think this – I think this story is far from over.
And the popularity of Putin, we see, mm-hmm. is primarily a result of this sort of general nationalist tone that has taken hold in Russia. And it would seem hard for someone to challenge Putin and also challenge the sort of nationalist emotions that are so strong in Russia right now. But I'm wondering if the opposition plays a role in local politics mm-hmm. around Russia.
Well, I mean, Navalny did run for mayor of Moscow and didn't do so badly, considering that he has no presence on television, which is where a lot of Russians get their information. But I think the important thing to note here is that Navalny on his own, the internet on its own, is not going to topple Putin. That's not going to happen. But an economic crisis could make the Russian government very vulnerable. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing that the Russian government is vulnerable because of the economy. And what the internet opposition can do is they can capitalize on that that vulnerability, right? I mean, they can use the internet to organize and to get people out onto the streets by using this moment in which many Russians are not happy about their economic situation.
So Navalny is not looking for a Sakharov moment where he becomes the martyr here and people rally around his detention as an event. It's more of an economic event, you say, which may be out there months from now that will affect people.
It may be a little bit of both. I mean, we're really going to have to see what happens this week. The fact that Navalny is talking about defying his house arrest is really raising the stakes and could actually land him in prison.
What about some of the other censorship, the fate of Pussy Riot, the other people who are actually in prison serving for being opposition critics of Vladimir Putin?
Well, I think, again, what makes Navalny a little bit different is that he does have this kind of mobilizing power, and maybe it's less strong than it was before. But I think one of the reasons why authorities have been reluctant to lock him up once and for all is because they're afraid that he has the power to get people out onto the streets. And I think that what makes him a little bit different.
Does Putin have to come up with a successor sometime in the next couple of years or basically be president for life? Because to come up with a successor basically is to create someone to challenge him.
That's a really good question. I think nobody really knows. I think that I've never heard anyone speak confidently about what will happen after Putin. I think it remains a really big question.
And people in Russia are probably just as scared of it as the senior leadership.
Sure. And I mean, I think, look, it's true that a lot of Russians are worried about chaos and they are worried about instability. And Putin, at least up till now, has represented stability and a kind of, kind of calm that I think people really value.
If news junkies on this program and elsewhere wanted to follow the opposition online, where would they go? What sites would
they
look at?
Well, they can follow at Navalny, but he tweets in Russian. But I think there are English translations of his tweets out there. So,
Emily Parker is a digital diplomacy advisor and senior fellow at the New America Foundation. She's also author of Now I Know Who My Comrades Are, Voices from the Internet Underground. Fascinating. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Coming up in just a moment, air travelers forking over millions in fees to improve their flight experiences. Are you even paying attention? Here's Troy from St. Paul, Minnesota. I flew Delta to JFK. The flight leaving MSP was ridiculously packed on a small commuter jet. Everyone who paid the fees to board first had lines as long as those who didn't. Upon arrival at JFK, we waited 40 minutes on the runway to get to a gate, and the flight's luggage was lost for an hour. I hate flying. And Troy paid extra to do all of that. Share your story at 877-8MYTAKE or thetakeaway.org.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Lumosity. Introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving. With brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a personalized brain training program, performance can be compared to global averages. Learn more at lumosity.com.